Hello and welcome to The Hammer. I'm your host, Dave, joined as always by my co-host,
Greg Pearson. How's it going, guys?
And you're listening to us at 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com. Steve and Liam could not be here this week, but Greg and I will do our best to keep it entertaining. Fortunately, this is a great week for MMA.
It's a busy week for MMA. Great is a relative term.
We've got UFC 312 coming up, which is a pretty good card, double championship fight. That'll be this Saturday. We also just finished watching Adesanya versus Imovov, which we're going to talk about. And, of course, it was just a wonderful week of news, so we get to talk about that. And if you're one of our American fans, you know, if you've listened to this after Tuesday, remember, you got to pay us a 25% tariff now.
Apparently. Oh, boy. What a weekend of news there. But yeah, we're going to stay away from that. We'll keep it to MMA because there's just so much to talk about that, you know.
Fortunately, between Connor and Bryce Mitchell, we've got stuff to talk about MMA stuff. But let's start, I think, with UFC 312 because it's a pay-per-view. So middleweight title is on the line. We have Driscus du Plessis, the champion, taking on Sean Strickland. And they have fought before, and Driscus won the first time. What do you think of this rematch?
Yeah, I mean, the first fight, you know, split decision was in our, you know, our stomping ground of Toronto. And Driscus, you know, he's unorthodox. He finds ways to win. You know, it's been said about him in the past that, like, this guy is striking. It's not even that great, but he teams to get the best of a lot of fighters. You know, since the Strickland win, he defended this title against Adesanya via submission. So he's been looking great. As unorthodox as he is, he's tough, and he's hard to get the better of. And he's fighting Sean Strickland, who, again, stand-up fighter, fights generally a smart stand-up style, not terribly aggressive when he doesn't have to be. So it's a close fight. However, it is also in Australia. So we're talking about, you know, again, Strickland, I saw some complaints from him about, oh, I'm fighting in another foreign country. Why can't I get a fight in the States? And I think he's one of those guys that does maybe get affected a little bit by it. So that, I think, may factor in slightly. It's a close fight on paper. I'm still going to go with Driscus, though. He got the better of Strickland in the first fight. Strickland hasn't looked fantastic since then. You know, Paulo Costa split win. Yeah, it just seems like he's sort of reached his peak. He is a great fighter. He is strategic. But I think Driscus is going to get the better of him again.
I don't really have any particular love for Strickland saying, like, he's the one fighter who wants to fight more in America. He's fought five times since 2023. Three of those times were in America, all of which were wins. He had a fight in Australia against Israel Adesanya, which was a win. And then the fight with Driscus in Toronto, which was a loss. So, I mean, like, really, the guy's winning even when he's not fighting in America. I really don't see that making much to complain about, particularly when his two biggest losses, Cannonier and Pereira, were both in Vegas. In terms of Driscus, like, he is, you know, Whitaker and Adesanya call him the best bad fighter they've ever faced. And, like, they're, part of MMA is just how physically talented you are. And Driscus is rock-solid chin, hard puncher, good grass, good grip, strong, fast. So, I mean, like, even though he doesn't seem like the most technical guy, he's kind of a meat and potatoes fighter, he has all those physical gifts. And that means that he can, like, bully up on you and shove off your takedowns and just punch you harder than you're punching him. So even when you've got better technique, he's hitting you back and he's hitting you harder than you're hitting him. And the thing with Strickland is, like, as good as he is, he's got that Philly shell style of, I'm going to move back and I'm going to hit you with jabs and teeps and I'm going to wear you down and I'm going to wear you down and I'm going to wear you down and it's going to go to decision. And I just don't think that's a great style to take in against Driscus because really that's his style and he's going to be hitting you harder than you're hitting him.
Yeah, so, he's gonna look better to the judges. Like, and we saw it. You know, there was a split decision victory there in the last fight. I don't think Strickland can finish him. I think, as you said, Dricus is very tough, and I think Dricus could potentially finish Strickland if he got the right, you know, combination in. But this fight to me feels like it's destined for a decision.
Oh yeah, very much so. Like, I think this one goes decision all day. You know, I think it could be another close one because I do think Strickland will be outstriking Dricus, but I think Dricus will be out damaging Strickland. And I think that if anyone here has any ability to finish at all, it's Dricus, because I've seen him finish with TKOs and ugly submissions, face crank submissions, but he's pulled it off a couple times. And Strickland, unfortunately, he just doesn't finish. So I'm going with Dricus here too. Should be a good fight. It'll be entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining. I'm hoping it's entertaining. I really am. I think that these guys both have the potential to be entertaining. I hope it's not a slog, but it might be. It might be a cautious slog. Again, my hope is that it's entertaining. I'm not super optimistic, though, about that.
Next, we go up to Zhang Weili versus Tatiana Suarez. This is going to be for the women's strawweight belt, and this is in the co-main event slot. So Zhang Weili is basically the just about the best we've ever seen do it in women's strawweight. She is on a 4-fight win streak, won the belt, defended it twice, beat Limosh, beat Yao Shannon, beat Carla Esparza, second reign as a strawweight champion. So just an absolute monster. Meanwhile, Tatiana Suarez has been in the company for a while, climbing the ladder, finally has her shot at it, and let's be honest, she's 10-0, she's completely undefeated. No one's found a way to beat Tatiana Suarez yet, because her ground game is just outstanding. It's out of this world. She can take down pretty much anyone, she can choke up pretty much anyone. If she can't choke you, she'll just beat on you until you quit.
Yeah, she's big and strong, the right style. You know, it's been the injuries, the time off, the, you know, inactivity in general for various reasons that has prevented her from, you know, cementing herself as a pound for pound number one, really, with her skill set. She just, as you said, she's 10-0, but the last, she fought twice in 2023, both wins, both submission wins. Before that, she hadn't fought since 2019, and we're just entering 2025. So the inactivity is always going to be a factor with her. But I think stylistically, I mean, this is just, I don't feel great about Zhang Weili's chances in this fight, especially if Tatiana Suarez is on top shape and top performance. If she's ready to go, the Tatiana Suarez that we saw against Jessica Andrade, then she's just going to overwhelm her with her size and strength and her ground game. I think Zhang Weili is incredibly talented. I think she's a vicious striker. I think she's very well-rounded as well. But it's not going to be good enough if Tatiana Suarez is able to impose her will from a strength and control perspective. And I feel, yeah, I'm worried here for Zhang Weili. I am thinking of giving the edge to Tatiana Suarez here.
I mean, Tatiana Suarez is a beast. Like, don't get me wrong. But Zhang Weili is strong in a lot of the same areas that Tatiana is strong is. I mean, Carla Esparza was never able to take her down. In fact, she choked Carla Esparza out. She's gone in there with some of the big beasts like Andrade, like JJ. She's beaten them. The only person that's ever beaten her has been like Rose Namajunas has her number. And she fluked a head kick knockout the first time. And she put together, you know, a gritty decision the second time. But other than that, Yan Xiaonan has held off big, strong wrestlers before. And I mean, like, I grant that Tatiana Suarez is good, but is she that much better than JJ or Jessica Andrade?
Wrestling, she is. That's the thing. It's stylistically, right? Like, it's this idea that, yes, Zhang Weili has been able to withstand, you know, wrestling pedigree, like a Carlos Sparsky, Jessica Andrade, who are strong, but both small. And not that level of strength and ability that Tatiana Suarez has. She's just a mutant for the division, really, at the end of the day. It's hard for me to see. Maybe Zhang Weili is able to catch her, use the striking, because she's got that power. She hits her, then things are going to be interesting. But to me, it's just, I just don't see it. I picked the wrestler in this case. I mean, odds wise, if you look at the odds, so I forgot to do the Dricus odds. The Dricus odds, just harkening back there, he's about a 2-to-1 favorite over Strickland. Moving to Zhang Weili, Tatiana Suarez, it's totally pick him. Like, we're looking at +110s, -111s, like really, really close fight. It's a coin flip for Zhang Weili and Tatiana Suarez.
Heavyweights, Justin Taffa versus Tyson Teixeira. Justin Taffa is one of the Taffa brothers. Good heavyweight, not super tall, not super great reach, but, you know, he's been in there and he's won some fights against Austin Lane and Parker Porter. No one I really care that much about. Meanwhile, Tyson Teixeira, Zakao is 7-0. He's making his debut from Sao Paulo. You know, what do we think of Tyson Teixeira? He's huge, great reach, a lot of good qualities in the heavyweight, but we haven't really seen him be in the UFC yet.
Yeah, dude's an absolute tree, 6'7". Young guy too, 25, undefeated, no major big competition. I mean, this is his UFC debut. He's coming in off a knockout on a Dana White Contender Series. Lots of knockouts, though. 6 of the 7 are knockouts. The other one's a submission. He shows he has that in his arsenal as well. I think it's one of those things where, obviously, with Justin Taffa, this is going to be a little closer to home for him. So how Tyson Teixeira deals with the travel is going to be a factor. Taffa's tough. Not terribly, you know, educated when it comes to technical ability, but he's tough as nails and he can hit hard. It's a matter of, can Justin Taffa, in the compact frame, overcome the kind of height reach of Tyson Teixeira, get in there and be able to land a big overhead right to put him on his back. I don't know what Tyson Teixeira's chin is like, because we've only seen him really knock out guys, and it's all been in the first round. So he's going to come and he's going to hit hard. When he comes in, you're going to see a toughness aspect of Taffa that maybe Teixeira has not seen yet. So it's like, okay, I'm going to hit him. How hard can I hit him, and how much effect is it going to have? Does he get to that stage where he's not knocked him out, we're a couple of minutes in, and he starts to get maybe a little tired, and Taffa starts to, you know, show that experience? So it's a very interesting matchup. I'm really – the travel it's tough. Because you'd think it'd be, okay, Taffa's, you know, loses a lot. He gets knocked out a lot. Teixeira's a knockout guy. Probably going to be Teixeira. But it's just not that cut and dry for me. I have to think about it.
I'm just disappointed that we're not getting another Taffa versus Walker fight, because the Taffa brothers want to fight the Walker brothers. Instead, we're getting a Teixeira brothers matchup. So there you go. Look, I don't know much about Tyson Teixeira because, you know, he fought mostly in Brazil and once in the Dana White Contender Series. And winning on a Dana White Contender Series by first round knockout, it's impressive, but what does it really tell me about how you're going to deal with the bright lights of the UFC? On the other hand, for the Taffa boys, I'm going to be honest, I don't have much faith. I don't really like these guys. I don't think they're that good. We got wins over for Parker Porter, who's his brother's also beaten, Harry Hunsucker, and Austin Lane. And I mean, like, this is the division of, like, maybe 20 guys, and none of those guys is ranked.
Yeah.
And then the guys who've beaten him, Carl Williams, Jared Vandervaughn, Carlos Felipe, none of those guys is ranked either.
But how? All decisions. That's where I'm at, right? It's the idea that what happens when Tyson Teixeira hits Justin Taffa and doesn't, you know, death touch him the way he's done against other fighters who maybe aren't as tough. Taffa, when he loses by decision. So he goes the distance or he knocks you out, right? So I'm just wondering what happens, because we haven't seen Tyson Teixeira go outside of the first round. That's where my mind is at here.
I'll grant you that the Taffa boys are tough, but I don't know, man. Like, everything about this fight is screaming to me, this is a fight that Tyson Teixeira should be able to win. When you're bringing in a 7-0 knockout guy and you got high hopes for him, you want to put him against a guy who's good but not that good. And Justin Taffa, to me, is the guy that I'm thinking of when I think, like, good but not that good. I'll go so far as to say I think he's probably going to knock Junior Tafa out. I mean, like, Tafa's good, but or Justin Tafa out, because I mean, like, this is heavyweight. Like, people get knocked out. Even the best get knocked out in heavyweight sometimes. So,
yeah, yeah. You know what? I'm gonna go a little off the board. I'm gonna go Tafa. I just think there's a few things stacked in the favor of him in this fight. If this is like a Vegas fight, where, you know, we're a standard Vegas fight where we're Tyson Teixeira, maybe it's the second fight in the UFC, something like that, I'm more inclined. But I just feel like this may go to Tafa. If you look at the odds, I mean, the odds makers are siding with Teixeira, not by a huge margin, though. We're looking at like 1.5, like -150s, and then Tafa at +130s. So a slight favorite, but not a heavy favorite for Teixeira.
Fair enough. We go forward. Light heavyweights. Jimmy Crute versus Rodolfo Bellotto. So Crute in Bellotto, pretty good match here. Both guys 28 years old. Crute's 12-4. Rodolfo Bellotto is 12-2. Bellotto's a little bit bigger, but not by that much. Where are you on this one?
So when we look at Crute, you know, he's another guy who's it's going to be a hometown fight for him, right? But God, the record. I mean,
it's bad,
again, right? It's not a huge amount of shame in like Jamal Hill, Anthony Smith losses. Alonzo Menafield kind of being on the same level as him, but still losing twice. I mean, and the draw was really because of a point deduction. So you could kind of consider that two losses. Jimmy Crute just not look good after a really strong entry to the UFC. He just has hit this real big snag after getting to that next level. I would have thought that he'd be able to get Alonzo Menafield, but he hasn't done that. So it fills me with a little bit of worry for him when fighting a guy in Bellotto who he's on 4 straight, but he's got that UFC win. He's got that initial UFC knockout over Ihor Pateria. So it's a different scenario than like a Tyson Teixeira who's making his debut. I think, man, I know that it's a hometown fight for Crute, and they're thinking maybe that he could get this. Bellotto may be a step down or even step from Menafield. It's hard to say because he's only had one UFC fight. He can hit you hard. He's a knockout guy. Crute can knock you out too. I am leaning towards Bellotto. I think a lot of shine has come off Crute. I hate those Menafield losses. So I think I have to side slightly here with Bellotto.
Yeah, I'll go with you on this one. I mean, like, Rodolfo Bellotto, like, we're talking about a guy on a 4-fight win streak versus a guy on a 4-fight lose streak. Do you know what I mean? And, like,
yeah.
The wins before that for Crute, they're okay. Modestus Bukauskas and Michael Oleksychuk. But, I mean, like, we're not running around high-fiving each other over a win over Modestus Bukauskas from 5 years ago. Like, what are we talking about here? So yeah. I just think that, like, Crute's lost all his momentum. And the other thing that kind of worries me is, like, if you look at all of his losses in the UFC, and there's 4 of them now, they're all he's been stopped. And Bellotto's the guy who finishes people. So, I mean, like, I don't know. I don't really like Crute. I don't think he's got much left for the sport. I think he's going to lose this one.
Yeah. Look at odds makers. They tend to agree, not by a massive amount, but again, but Bellotto's like a -160, -170 range. Crute, we're looking at, you know, +130, +140. So a slight favorite towards Bellotto here from the odds makers.
We go forward. Welterweights, Jake Matthews versus Francisco Prado. Matthews is the hometown vet here. He's 30 years old. He's been in the company for a while, 20-7. Francisco Prado is newer. He's 22 years old. We don't have a Wikipedia page on him yet, and he's 12-2. So, look, my initial thought on this is, like, you know, Prado, 12-2, newer to the company. Typically speaking, they give guys like this a fight that they think the guy's going to win. On the other hand, Jake Matthews is a guy I've called a lot over his like last 8 years in the UFC. He's a guy that we knew him from Ultimate Fighter Nations back 10 years ago.
We were super high on him back then.
We were super high on him. And if you look at Matthews, look, he's a win one, lose one guy. I grant that. But he is exactly the wrong kind of win one, lose one guy that you give to a new guy. Because he's super tough. He's an extremely good grappler. And, like, he's also got enough of a stand-up game that if you're a really good grappler, he doesn't have to grapple with you. Because he can just opt out of it and decide to fight you on the feet.
There's another guy who's fighting at home, too.
Yeah. So he's in that, like, little heathen kind of spoiler category for me, where he tends to spoil guys like, oh, like, I'm going to call Michael Morales because I think Michael Morales looks really good. Oh, there goes Michael Morales. You know, like, this happens all the time with Jake Matthews. So I'm going to call Jake Matthews here.
Yeah, I can't believe he's only 30. I mean, he's been fighting it for so long. I thought he was, like, 35.
2013 is when we first met this guy. And we met him in Quebec.
Been around a long time. And yeah, like he'll have these issues where, you know, he'll have a loss and you think, oh, here we go. Here's the fall. And then he'll win. But then he'll lose and then he'll win. Like he's a perfectly competent fighter who can get a win against like a lower level guy. And as the type of guy when you're coming in to, you know, early in your UFC career that you're going to – maybe you don't want to see. And Prado, like – it's not like he's been a world beater. He's lost two out of his three UFC fights. You know, they're not, again, it's not like, it's not like these are like scrubs that he's lost to. Zell Huber just had that awesome fight with Esteban Rybovic, right? So Zell Huber is a tough, tough guy. Jamie Mullarkey is obviously, he's been around a while. He's a decent guy, but he's spotty as well. I feel like with Prado, that he's very, very young as well. Youth is on his side. But I don't know if he's that level that is going to come in and just get to Jake Matthews. Again, it's hometown fight, too. Like, this is the travel aspect, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
And I'll put this out there for in terms of hometown fights.
Go ahead.
So, Matthews has fought five times in Australia in the UFC against Emil Mech, Rostam Ackman, Li Jinglang and Bogan Yelkovich, and every single time of that was a win.
Yep.
He has a lot of response and was against Andrew Holbrook. So I mean, like,
yeah,
you know, like it, just being a hometown guy and being that tough of a veteran, and the fact that he's already spoiled guys like Emil Mech that we have a lot of hope in. I don't know, man. I think he's gonna spoil Prado.
Yeah, I'm leaning in that way too. Like if you look at Prado's one win in the UFC, I mean it's against Otman Azater, who I was super high on a little while ago, but he's, you know, he lost to Michael Johnson at that too, and he's really kind of fallen off the radar. He's my former prospect of the year. Bit of a disappointment there. So yeah, I'm thinking Matthews here as well. Again, if this is like in Vegas or like Brazil or something, I might think a little bit differently. But for it to be in Australia, Matthews has performed well in his home country previously. Yeah, it feels like Matthews here. The odds makers agree. We're looking at Matthews as a, you know, -210, -220 range. Prado +180, +170 range. So yeah, the odds makers are thinking Matthews too.
So then we go forward to the prelims. And in the prelims, we got a little bit of a fall off in the name quality. So Greg, stop me if there's a guy you really want to talk about.
Okay.
Featherweights. We got Jack Jenkins taking on Gabriel Santos, 13-3 versus 11-2. Do you particularly care about either of these guys?
I wouldn't say I don't care. It's just more like it's you know, undercard guys. We can go through the odds. I mean, we're looking at, you know, Gabriel Santos being a relatively heavy favorite here, 225. So that tells you right there. But I'm not terribly super interested in a lot of these prelims.
Lightweights, Tom Nolan, 8-1 versus Vlachyshov Borshev, 8-4-1.
Yeah, Borshev's pretty solid. He's the favorite in this fight as well.
Been in the company a while. I might go with Tom Nolan here. He's really young, but he's also huge for the division. So I don't know. Maybe Tom Nolan.
Yeah, Borshev's about a -150. So not a killer.
Yeah.
Not a killer favorite, but yeah.
Women's flyweights, Wang Kong versus Bruna Brazil. Both are 32 years old, and Bruno Brazil is 31 years old.
This feels kind of like, I mean, you know, Wang Kong, I mean, she was going great until she ran into Gabriela Fernandez, that submission, which was not great. Like, she was really solid up until then. But again, she's a striker, right? Kickboxer. So she's still the heavy favorite in this. You know, Bruna hasn't really done much, to be perfectly honest. I think that Wang Kong is going to be able to outstrike her here. And again, Kong is about a minus 400 favorite. So that kind of tells you right there.
And then the early prelims, bantamweights, Colby Thickness is going to be taking on Alexander Topuria, who is best known for being the older brother of Ilir Topuria, the current champion of featherweights. Topuria is 5-1. This is his debut. He's only 29 years old despite being the older brother, so maybe he's got something.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he's a relatively heavy favorite. That's an awesome name, Colby Thickness. Fantastic. The thick cheese, thick Colby.
Yep.
So he's Topuria. Yeah, he's minus 450 favorite here. I think there's a lot of hype behind him.
I will say this though, Colby Thickness, aside from having a name like a delicious cheese, he's 7-0, and I think when a guy who's like Topuria, who's never fought in the UFC before, is 4-1 favorite, I think he's getting a lot of shine from having a brother. If you want to play a lot, play the odds. There might be something there.
Yeah, I mean, you could play here, and also there's an aspect of the fact that Thickness is actually a last minute replacement. So this was supposed to be Cody Haddon, and maybe that's one of the reasons for the long odds, perhaps. Because, the Cody Haddon fight was more of like a pick'em. So I think there's maybe some value here. Because you're looking at Thickness, he's sitting at about plus 300, plus 355. And there aren't a lot of affiliates who have odds listed out, at least from what I'm looking at. So you're right, Dave. Maybe this is somewhere where there's some value.
I just think that when you're looking at like, oh, we've got a guy who's lost a fight, taking a guy who's undefeated and also more experienced. Mm. Like, I don't see how the guy who lost the fight and is less experienced is a 4-1 favorite. It's too much to me.
Yeah, it might be early odds, I think, that's an effect there.
Yeah. Welterweights, Jonathan Mikuliev will be taking on Kevin Jussett. Mikuliev is 7-1, Jussett's 10-3. Lightweights, Quillian Salkalid is going to be taking on Anshul Jubilee, both are 7-1.
This is another one that's way, way big odds for Salkalid. He's, again, minus 450 here, so which is funny because they both really have similar records, but I don't know.
maybe the odds make me know something I don't. Flyweights, Hyung Sung Park is going to be taking on Namjergal Tumindemirbarl. Hyung Sung Park is 9-0. Namjergal is 8-1.
Yeah, Park's about a 2-1 favorite here.
And there was supposed to be a fight between Ray Cesaria and Stuart Nickel, but that got canceled. So I don't know. There's no replacement announced on that one yet.
Yeah, overall, I mean, you look at, it's a very, very top heavy card, I would say. You know, those two title fights are fantastic and love to see them, especially because we don't see Tatiana Suarez fight a lot. And it's her toughest test yet by leaps and bounds. So I love that. Dricus versus Strickland, a rematch for the title, a good competitive fight as well. Two nice title fights at the top. Then it kind of really falls off a cliff after that when it comes to like name recognition.
You know the deal. You know what I got to ask you next.
Yeah.
Here's
some
point time. Greg, busy man with a child. You got to maximize your time and enjoyment. Where are you going to start watching this fight?
Oh, man. Out of blatant curiosity, I'm going to give Tafa and Teixeira a look as well. But I'm only going three from the top here.
Three from the top. Wow.
On a right. Pay-per-view. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm telling you, like, I think I like Jake Matthews and Francisco Prado enough to sit through a Jimmy Crute and Rodolfo Bellotto fight. I think I might go full main card on this one.
Okay, yeah, it's a real. I mean, I guess it's kind of indicative when they do these cards that are in outside of your classic venues, like the U.S., Brazil, even Canada to an extent. They tend to do well with loading up the numbered cards in Canada. You go to Australia and you do get a lot of these, you know, really kind of dips after your main event and your co-main event. So I'm kind of not surprised.
Well,
but definitely like the two top fights are on my radar for sure.
It's a dip for me because like I don't really have that much investment in Justin Taffer or Jimmy Crute. And even like Jake Matthew, he's like a 50-50 fighter who's been in the company for 10 years. Like it's not like there's that much unmined mithril in that vein. But like you look at it, it's other than the top two fights, it's all hometown guys. So yeah. I mean like they haven't loaded up the name recognition, but I think the building is going to be hot because it's all hometown guys.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? And you have to kind of do that. So yeah, I'm sure the gate will be fine and I'm sure it'll make a little bit of money, but it's, yeah, it's definitely top heavy.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break and then we will come back with Adesanya versus Imavov and also some lovely news. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
I'm Eddie Alvarez. You're listening to The Hammer.
And we are back at 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com. And we come back with a show that we just finished watching that, oh man, this was a great show that was really made me feel bad as someone who's called fights before. So Adesanya versus Imavov. We start with the middleweights, Israel Adesanya versus Nazarene Imavov. Adesanya really needed to win this one to get into that conversation of who gets next over whoever wins from next week, Dricus versus Sean Strickland. And unfortunately, who gets next is not going to be Adesanya because Imavov walked him down and knocked him out.
Yeah. I thought Adesanya could have this. I was wrong. Imavov looked pretty good. And a second round knockout against this level of fighter that's Israel Adesanya. It's his fourth win in a row. Lots of good wins up until then. You know, I look at this record and I think to myself, I got to listen again to what I was thinking the last show. But I had a lot of faith in Adesanya. Wasn't realized. Performance of the night bonus for Imavov. And he's looking good. I mean, now you've got in middleweight, he'll move up. He was five before. He'll move up to that top level. Obviously, Hamzat is a factor. He always will be in the division. But Imavov's right there now, and he's fresh too. Like he's got a title shot coming.
I think they're going to go with Hamzat next. But like Imavov is definitely in the conversation now. And unfortunately, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think that Adesanya's got anything left. I think he's done.
Oh, done. Done is a relative term. I mean,
let me make my argument. Yeah. So he's lost three times now. Imavov, Duplessis, Sean Strickland. And then before that, he's 1-1 with Pereira. He's got a win, but then he's got a loss. Now, the problem I have with those four of those five losses, or four of those five fights, he lost striking. He's supposed to be the greatest striker in the world. Strickland outstruck him, Pereira outstruck him, Dricus outstruck him. Imavov could not get the takedowns to work, so he just walked him down and outstruck him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I think if you're getting outstruck by Imavov, it's real bad. And, I mean, like, even the fight with Pereira, he won that fight. He avenged that loss. But it seems like he was really motivated because Pereira had beat him twice before that. And if you look at the fight, Pereira won 90% of it. And he had Adesanya up against the cage and hurt. And we were like, oh my God, Pereira's going to finish him. And then Adesanya just cracked him with a bomb out of nowhere and finished him. Mm. And it's a great moment for Adesanya. But he was getting outstruck in that fight too. So I just think that like my argument here, why I think Adesanya's done is I don't think he's a good enough MMA fighter. And I mean, yeah, like, don't get me wrong. He's an amazing kickboxer, but he doesn't have the wrestling option. He doesn't have the, well, I'll just take it to the ground and submit you option. He has got to fight a kickboxing fight. He can't just dive on Dricus or Strickland or Imavov or Hamza and just say like, all right, like, you know, it's getting sketchy on my feet. I'm just going to go to my takedowns for a bit. And if he can't win striking against Imavov and Duplessis and Sean Strickland, and he doesn't have the wrestling option, I don't know, man. Like, you know, you're 38 years old, 35 years old. I don't think he's that motivated anymore because he's already won the belt a couple times. I just don't, like, how much does he really want it?
Yeah, especially because he's nowhere near a title and probably won't be for a little while. Imavov, I mean, losing a striking fight to Imavov, I think there's less shame in that than, you know, even losing like a striking fight to a Sean Strickland, because Imavov is, he's Dagestani, but we've always said, like, it's not all Dagestani guys are just wrestlers. Like, he's more of a striker. But it's still, yeah, you're right. Like, there's no relevance of top level anymore for Adesanya, at least for his recent losses. He will drop here. He'll drop definitely like a spot, but probably a couple of spots. I think they'll pop him below Chimaev as well after this. And from there, it's, you got a couple of options. You go and you would have to fight a lower ranked guy to try and do something there. Get yourself back up. Does he have the patience for that? I don't know. But you're right, Dave. It's definitely a crossroads for him now.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you look at those guys who are outside of that top five picture. You're talking Vettori, Cannonier, Paulo Costa, all of whom he's fought before, Vettori a couple times now. And you got, like, Roman Dolatze and Brendan Allen. Like, if I'm Israel Adesanya, how excited am I to get dropped out of the top five or six picture and put with, like, Roman Dolatze? Like, how motivated am I to come to work?
Yeah. And I mean, it's like we'll talk about Shara Magomedov in a minute, but
yeah,
you know, there's guys like, you know, he's kind of the flashy name that's in that lower rank, but it's like, I mean, timing wise, it kind of makes sense to maybe do that because spoiler alert, Shara lost. But again, is there a lot in that for Adesanya? There's a lot more to lose than gain there, so it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to match make with him.
So, middleweights, Sharabudin Bulut Magomedov took on MVP Michael Page. Magomedov was 15 wins coming into this one. And, you know, I had the thought of, like, man, he's going to beat Michael Page because he's just going to be able to grapple him. And then, like, he might be in the conversation. And, you know, to my credit, he did manage to outgrapple Michael Page and shove him up against the cage. And then he just didn't know where to go from there. He had nothing else. And Page kept hitting him and hitting him and hitting him and hitting him. And it wasn't a pretty fight, but Page ended up winning. Sharabudin Magomedov just kind of autopiloted himself to a loss.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you look at the fact that Michael Page won this fight by unanimous decision, and you think it's, as you said, it's like, Shara maybe thought he could autopilot this with control and out grappling and his style trying to fight his fight. Michael Page, though, he's a veteran. He knows how to win. He knows what to do. He knows where he's better. He knows where he doesn't want to go. And he's by far the most difficult opponent that Shara's faced. So it was a bit of a learning experience, I think, for Shara, the fact that he couldn't dominate the way that he had been previously able to. So I mean, it was unanimous decision too. Like, we're not talking about a very, very close split. Like, all three judges gave it to Page. So,
and only one judge gave Shara even a round. And I mean, like, it's fine to push a guy against the cage, but I mean, like, it's not when, like, you got to do something from there. Grab his hips, pull him out, take him down. But there was not even a takedown attempt from Shara. He just kind of pushed him and then was like, okay, now I've got you pushed. Now what are you going to do? Are you just going to punch me 40 times? Huh. Well, I've got you pushed. Well, dude, you're eating punches.
Yep. Yeah. So, a bit rude awakening for Shara. Where he goes next, I don't know. As I said, I mean, is he high ranked enough to for you to throw him against Adesanya for something? I mean, it's obviously a massive discrepancy there. Timing would work out. Intrigue would work out. Shera hasn't really earned that, I would say. I'm not sure where you go with him next, to be honest.
But the other argument is, I think if anyone out of here gets a fight with Adesanya, it might be MVP.
That would make some sense, yeah. I mean, for if MVP wants to sort of, he's a great talker. Adesanya does this talking too. It could be a good lead up.
Great
Michael
talker.
Page will just, yeah.
Great strikers, both great strikers. I mean, like both flashy strikers. It could be fireworks.
Yeah, it could be. And this will put Page, you know, Page will come in that probably 14 when he winds up getting his middleweight ranking later. So yeah, I think that would be kind of cool to watch.
Yeah. Heavyweights, Sergey Pavlovich versus Jarzino Rozenstruik. This was a classic Jarzino Rozenstruik performance. He just could not only could he not pull the trigger, he couldn't even find the trigger. There was no trigger to be had. So
yeah,
Pavlovich just kept jabbing him. Whole five rounds, 145 strikes, only 25 of them significant. Wasn't landing significant strikes, didn't need to. Just beat Rozenstruik down forever.
Yeah, this was not terribly exciting. Yeah, Pavlovich is better. Just flat out, plain and simple, and literally no surprises when it came to who get their hand raised in this fight.
Yeah, and Rozenstruik's another one. Like, we keep talking about what a great striker he is. He keeps losing striking fights. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Bantamweights. Another person lost the I'm the heir to Khabib Nurmagomedov sweepstakes. Poor Saeed Nurmagomedov lost this one, but oh my God, was it a fight. They were battling back and forth hard, scrapping it out. Vinicius Oliveira got a rib broken middle of the fight. And you could see he was in agony, and he was just like, no, I'm just going to keep fighting. And he just kept fighting. And he managed to out-take down the Nurmagomedov. So, Vinicius Oliveira, absolute monster, wins this fight.
Yeah, a huge. Fight of the night, too. Obviously, fight of the night, you know, the way you described it, Dave, it makes perfect sense. Big, big win for Vinicius Oliveira. I don't know if this will get him ranked, because Saeed wasn't ranked either, but... it's definitely on the cusp of that. I mean, he looked great, broken rib and all. He looked awesome.
Yeah, like when you see a guy who's so hurt in the ribs that he can't even sit on the stool, and he just storms out there and goes for a takedown. It's like, man, you're just a badass. Like, yeah. It's hard not to respect that.
Yeah, for sure.
Lightweights, Furas Ziam versus Mike Davis. Furas Ziam. Again, a little bit faster, a little bit more active, more takedowns, more strikes. Won this fight. A lot of decisions on this card. Ikram Aliskarov versus Andre Muniz. We called this fight. We had great hopes for this fight. Unfortunately, the fight got canceled because passport issues. So,
yep,
there you go. Prelims. Muhammad Naimov versus Khan Ofli, Genghis Khan Ofli. Unfortunately, the Genghis Khan did not bring what he needed to do to win this fight. Naimov just thumped him. Again, decision. Shamil Gaziev versus Thomas and Peterson in the heavyweight division. Gaziev is the laziest, slowest-looking heavyweight I've ever seen. Just looks so lazy, so slow. Peterson, also a massive beast of a man, kind of hippoed at him. Like an angry hippo charge, and Gaziev just uncorked and knocked the dude senseless. So yeah. Gaziev gets another win by knockout.
Yeah, thank God for that, because there weren't a lot of. I mean, you got. I mean, that was the last knockout for a while before like five decisions. So
yeah, and Gaziev's just, I don't know, man. Like I'm never gonna be happy to call a Gaziev fight or pick him in a fight, but he just keeps winning. He keeps winning by knockout. So it comes a point where you're going to be like, I don't know, man. Like, maybe he's just really good. And I've been making fun of him for nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he lost to the aforementioned Rozenstruik. So I don't know. I don't know where his upside, where his ceiling is.
Fair enough. Lightweights, Terrence McKinney versus Demir Hadzovic. Hadzovic was coming back after a long layoff. Maybe he should have taken some more time because McKinney lit him up in the first round, knocked him down, jumped on his back, and just ground and pounded him to death. First round knockout.
Yeah, McKinney looked good here. He looked really good.
Women's flyweights, Jasmine Jezavicius versus Mauro Bona Silva. Jasmine's gotten really solid, and she picked up a decision here, and again, just was better. Outstruck her, yeah. Out-took down her, just showing to be really, really good. And then Jasmine, being a smart fighter, jumps up and says, like, hey, I'm on a streak now. I want my shot at a belt. When do I get a shot at the belt? And you know what? Why not, Jasmine?
Well, Mauro Bona Silva is a nice win. Like I said, when the lead up said this was going to be a good statement win to have. And yeah, Mauro, again, it's not like a championship level victory, but it's definitely a nice victory, a legit victory, and somewhere where, yeah, she's now on, what is it, 4 in a row we're looking at. You got to shake off that Tracy Cortez loss. Man, that was just so frustrating. Now where you rank her, she might move up a little bit. Title shot, I don't know if she's ready for that yet. I'm a huge fan. I would love to see her get a title shot, but I think there's another win that needs to happen before that.
See, when she jumped up and said, like, I'd like a title shot, I was like, well, that's ridiculous. Obviously, you're not going to get a title shot off of this win. And then I went and I looked at the rankings, and I was like, okay, well, we got Shevchenko, who's the champion, obviously. And then, like, below that, like, I don't know, she's already beat Grasso. She's already beat Ferro. She's already beat Blanchfield. She's already beat Macy Barber. So are we at the point now where maybe Jasmine can take a shot at this just because Shevchenko's pretty close to clearing out that division?
Yeah, and the interesting thing about it is it's kind of an odd thing with Bueno Silva because she's not like this was her first flyweight fight, right? So she was 7 in bantamweight, and that's a really solid win. If you're going to beat number 7, you're number 12. Different division though, flyweight's deeper. So to me, like 7 kind of translates a little bit lower when it comes to where Bueno Silva would fit in. This, I think, brings her up a few spots. It's hard because Tracy Cortez is ranked ahead of her for a reason. But, you know, if you're going to give a title shot to Jasmine, go for it. I'm a fan. I would love to see that. I just think she needs another win.
I think it's like when you're ranked 12, it's hard to ask for a title shot. And even though you beat ranked 7, she was 7 in a different division. So, I mean, like, I don't know. But like I said, there's a lot of people ahead of her that have already had their shot. So maybe in the world of MMA math, it happens. Featherweights, Bogdan Grad versus Lucas Alexander. Bogdan Grad looks exactly like an orc from the movie Lord of the Rings. And he stormed over there, punched Lucas Alexander, knocked him down, jumped on his back, and pounded him out.
Yep, bonus for Bogdan Grad, too, performance of the night. So $50,000 in the pocket.
Yeah, he's probably going to go buy the spears with that. Heavyweights, Hamdi Abdelhamad versus Jamal Pogues. This is a decision. I'm going to be honest with you. This is a fight I had to take a break because I got quite bored of it. And that was all for Adesanya versus Imovov. So, man, did we mess up some calls in the first three. Nothing went the way we thought.
Pavlovich went the way we thought. And I think we called Oliveira, too. I think a lot of us had some faith in Oliveira as well.
But, you know, the top two was definitely some surprises.
Big time.
Yeah, so that was that for that card. And then we go to the world of MMA news.
Yeah. I don't even want to talk about this, but I guess we have to.
MMA news. Look, it was a busy week for the news from our brothers to the south. And we love you, brothers to the south. We really do love you. But I'm going to be honest with you. If I see one more article about Justin Baldoni and Blake Lively fighting over their stupid movie, I'm going to scream. I don't care. Now, Bryce Mitchell, who is best known for taking a power drill to his own testicles.
And winning some fights.
And winning some fights.
let's preface this by saying that Bryce Mitchell, it's not like he's a scrub who's never won. Like, he's got some wins in the UFC. So, yeah, like, we're going to call it what it is and say, like, mm-hmm. he is a relevant UFC fighter.
And Bryce Mitchell, a couple weeks ago, he had some unkind things to say about Elon Musk. And people feel some kind of way about Elon Musk. So when he was going out there being like, Elon Musk is a terrible person, wasting his money on rockets when he could be helping people, a lot of people were like, man, Bryce Mitchell's making some good points here. Maybe I like Bryce Mitchell. And being an MMA commentator who knows Bryce Mitchell, I was saying, don't get that excited, guys. The reason Bryce Mitchell thinks it's a waste of money to spend money on rockets is because he thinks the world is flat. He's a flat earther.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he didn't just take a power tool to his own testicles. He also believes the world is flat. And then Bryce Mitchell got in a podcast and said he's done his own research. He's thought it through. He doesn't believe what he learned in school. He did his own research, and he decided that Adolf Hitler was actually a pretty good guy. Just a real good guy that, you know, kind of guy you'd go fishing with. Adolf Fischler. And then he also decided that, you know, he would go into expanding on why he thought Adolf Hitler was a good guy. And the reason he thinks Adolf Hitler was a good guy is because Adolf Hitler was protecting the country, the German country, from the Jews. And the Jews were trying to turn Germans gay. So not just like a Kanye West, like, actually did some research, did his own research into Hitler's philosophy and was like, no, man, I like Hitler because he was fighting back against the gays and the Jews, and he burned trans books. Man, look, saying something stupid is kind of par for the course from an MMA fighter. But actually doing your own research into Hitler's philosophy and being like, no, I agree with his philosophy, just a real bad look.
Yeah, I mean, Bryce Mitchell has had a history, as you mentioned, Dave, of just taking really, really extreme viewpoints. And, you know, it's episode one of his podcast. He's obviously looking to grab like a whole bunch of viewership, go crazy controversial. And do I think it's 100% troll? No, I don't, because I actually do think Bryce Mitchell is kind of crazy. So I do.
Yeah, it's lunatic.
I wish I could say that, oh, he's doing this completely for theater and he doesn't actually believe this and this is a work. I don't think it is. Yeah, it's not great. It's not like Colby Covington, where Colby Covington was obviously doing a work. Bryce Mitchell, it feels like he's legitimately behind a lot of this, which is really, really disappointing and depressing. What he said was stupid, awful. We all know this. The 99% consensus on the fact that it was. But let's talk about Dana's reaction.
Yeah. Well, before we do that, I just want to point something out. There's like three Jewish people involved in the MMA. It's Errol Hawani, Noah Lahat, and me.
there's a few more.
I've been doing this podcast with these guys for 15 years now, and I haven't turned them gay yet. So, I mean, like, don't drag me into this. Dana White obviously was asked about, like, hey, what do you think of Bryce Mitchell endorsing Hitler? And Dana White was like, well, he's got the freedom of speech.
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of hypocrisy there. Also, like, there's been the reports of, like, why he fought, he fired Stitch, right? Stitch, who was complaining about the contracts and pay and stuff like that. You know, so that's the number one cardinal sin. Never criticize the UFC's business. That's where free speech stops. I think credit to Dana for really denouncing it as well, though, publicly, like saying, you know, this is awful, it's disgusting, calling it exactly what it is. I'm going to give him credit for that. Thank God.
Yeah, awful, disgusting. But, am I going to punish the guy? No, of course not.
Yeah, the whole punishment thing, like they could do whatever they want. They run the UFC. I would have liked to see something there, at least maybe take it away from him, you know, potentially being a face. Like, he's not the face of the company, obviously. He's a mid-level fighter, but having your company associated with him, you really want to distance yourself from that. And allowing him to kind of continue fighting unabashed, it's not great. This idea that, well, it's a fight business, so you can go see him get his, you know, get his ass kicked. Okay, fine. But really, like, you're going to pay him part of the money that people pay to watch him get his ass kicked. So, I don't know. What's interesting to me, though, is the sponsorship deals, right? Because Venom, I think, is the main sponsor right now. The UFC used to be Reebok. The fighters come out, they got to wear the Venom gear, right? Venom's their sponsor. They're contractually obligated to do this. They get some money for it. You know, other sponsors have dropped Bryce Mitchell, rightfully so. What happens with these UFC sponsored companies where every fighter comes out wears his gear? Does Venom have any say in this? I'm interested to see how that shakes out, because, you know, I don't think any company would want to support this guy. I think it'd be ludicrous to want to do that. Even like the more far right companies, like, you know, the ones that have kind of come out, would they even want to sponsor something so blatant? I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes when it comes to financially, business-wise, what happens. I know we saw Dana's point of view that he's disgusted by it, but won't punish him, free speech, etc. But I want to see how the sponsors react.
Well, it turns out I got an answer to that. So some sponsors started announcing that they're not going to be sponsoring Bryce Mitchell anymore. So Bryce apologized. This morning he came out and said, I'm sorry I sounded offensive. I definitely was not trying to offend anyone, but I know I did. And then he said, I know a lot of people died in the Holocaust, and that's a fact. Hitler did a lot of evil things. I think we can all agree on that. I'm definitely not a Nazi, and definitely do not condone any of the evil things Hitler did. So I guess the ultimate truth is the money was like, dude, this is too far. And Bryce was just like, no, money, 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 come back, money, come back.
Yeah, I want to be able to have some gear on when I fight. I'm not interested in going out pulling a Dennis Hallman and having, you know, wearing like a G-string with my own name on it to the ring. So, yeah, I think I'm going to walk it back. I mean, I hate this. I hate hearing when people do this, especially, you know, as I said, work versus reality, what they actually think. You never fully know. I mean, I'm not his like personal therapist or anything. I hate the fact that it happens, though, that people still say stuff like this. I get it, free speech, whatever, but can we just do without it? You know, do we need to have that?
There's guys who are turning their dial up from a 7 to an 11. And then there's Bryce Mitchell, who on the Ultimate Fighter series said, I didn't believe in soap, but you guys have convinced me. I'm now going to begin washing with soap because I now believe that soap is good. And I mean, like, man, if you don't believe in soap, and you're a guy who works out all the time.
No, but you can have these weird, crazy conspiracy theory beliefs without involving like some of the most terrible atrocities that has ever happened in the history of the world. Like, you're going to say crazy stuff like the earth is flat. Okay, fine, whatever. I don't believe in soap, these things, you know, that sort of thing. But like, does the Hitler stuff really have to come in? Can we just leave that alone? Can we leave it aside?
Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not endorsing the Hitler stuff being a Jew, but you need to, when you're building a house, you got to start with the foundation. And if you don't believe in soap or seatbelts or that the world is round, the foundation's pretty shaky. And when the foundation's shaky, then sometimes weird stuff's going to occur and just going to fall into a sinkhole. And unfortunately, I think COVID was a sinkhole that a lot of these guys fell into, because I think Bryce Mitchell, just like, he's different than Colby Covington. I think he legitimately does believe this thing, because I don't think he believes in anything. He doesn't believe in soap. He doesn't believe in seatbelts. He doesn't believe in wearing a tool belt when he's got a power drill next to his testicles. Yeah. So, you know, I think the foundation of knowledge just isn't there for the guy. And the thing is, Bryce Mitchell made his statements and they weren't good. And I don't think any of us liked them. But Conor McGregor was like, man, why is the spotlight not on me? I want my time in the spotlight. So Conor came out with a rant to Khabib Nurmagomedov. I don't know. I don't want to spend time covering like every tweet from a guy who's, in my mind, retired. So until he has a fight coming up, unless it's something real, like a court case or he's signed a fight, yeah, I think I'm done with Conor.
Unless it's something relevant, like news relevant, like, you know, these sorts of stories around his misconduct court, or, you know, yeah, he's going to be fighting. I agree.
I'll do official news that involves a court. I will do presidential runs. I will do official fights that are real, Not like I just want to fight a dude, but like it's got to be signed by an actual organization somewhere. And I will also consider doing Ultimate Fighter if they send him for the Ultimate Fighter.
Right, that's obvious.
But I think that's about all that we have for the news. You've been listening to us on 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com.
Yeah, and next week we'll be talking about something, you know, hopefully a good pay-per-view, a good couple of fights, and we'll see you next week.